Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Awesome with Cody. I am Cody. So, continuing on with our December theme of Star Wars stories, I'm going to jump right into arguably one of the best stories that I feel is not written well, but is a really fun story to read and has a really good, really big impact on the canon itself. So the story I'm talking about is called Star Wars Aftermath. It's written by Chuck Wendig. His writing style is a bit weird. It's a little different. If you've never read any of the Star Wars books that I've talked about this month, as well as any of the other ones, very few of them go by through a narrative, which means they go from a certain point of view of a person, so a POV narrative versus just an overarching story narrative where it has, you know, counterparts from everybody. One of the big things I like about an actual POV narrative, you get a lot of the inner monologue, which enriches how the character is done in the story, how he or she is kind of tells their story, because they can think when you hear their thoughts and what they think about other people without having to say out loud or with, you know, that kind of thing. It helps a lot. So this is not one of those, like Heir to the Jedi was, where that was one of the very first POV narrative stories behind Luke. This happens to follow a group of different characters, so it's an overarching story narrative versus a character POV narrative. But anyways, this takes place, so this series, this is a trilogy. I've only read the first one because I was very put off by the way Chuck wrote the story. The story is excellent. I like the characters in it. It's his writing style and the choice of words that he uses, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But the story is really cool. So this trilogy, the Aftermath trilogy as it's known, is made of three books. I've only read the first one, like I said, but the first one's called Star Wars Aftermath. The second one is called Star Wars Aftermath Life Debt. And that one follows Chewie and Han, which is pretty cool. I definitely want to read that one, but after how much I didn't really care for Chuck's writing and knowing he wrote that one and the third one, I was kind of off-put, but I really want to learn more about him because, it's cool because it bridges the gap between Episode 6 and Episode 7, and it tells you a lot of what happened and how, like, the Empire rebuilt itself into the First Order. So you get a lot of that, the building of the Empire and how it struggled at the end of the, as they call it, the fall of the Empire, the Aftermath. Haha, get it? Aftermath. And the third book is called Aftermath, Empire's End. And that, obviously, if you listen to the title, that kind of follows the end of the Empire fully. And what that does is actually develops into the First Order. So you get to kind of learn about how the First Order came about out of the remnants and the wreckage of the Empire after it was destroyed. Essentially fell apart at the end when they lost Palpatine after the second Death Star was destroyed by everybody. I'm not going to say Luke because he didn't technically destroy it. I mean, Lando technically destroyed it. But anyways, everyone chipped in their own right. They almost blew up Luke too, if you're thinking about it, so it was kind of crazy. Anyways, so this takes place pretty much right after the second Death Star exploded. So it's I think it's like a month or so. It probably tells me in here, but I'm not really looking at it too much. But so basically, in this book, Chuck introduces a couple new characters, brings a couple characters from other books that are in canon that need more, a little more backstory, because they're very important to what happens to the Empire and obviously what happens in these books. So one of them is Admiral Rae Sloane, R-A-E, not R-E-Y like Ray, but Rae Sloane. She is basically an admiral inside the Empire that takes it upon herself to help try to organize the failings of the Empire as it's crumbling, because there's a power grab. Once Palpatine dies in the explosion of the second Death Star, the Empire fractures because of everybody's trying to grab at more power because they want to be the next person in charge. Well, she's a true believer in the Empire, and which actually leads to her helping form the First Order, and I'll get to that in a little bit when you kind of go into it. So the whole thing comes down to the fact that in this, she calls all these other generals and admirals to meet at this Empire-controlled planet away from Endor, where obviously the Death Star blew up, calling all these forces that were kind of spread around the galaxy to come in and reform to try to pick a new leader, but also just kind of organize themselves so they don't fall apart, because she knows how these other generals and admirals react to grabbing of power and trying to get up the top of everybody else. And it can be very, you know, bad for the structure. It's not very, they're not all like, okay, we should do a formal vote. They're just like, I want to be the supreme leader. Well, that's a First Order thing. But they want to be Grand Moff and all those different things. So she doesn't right away go for that. She just wants to get everyone together so they can civilly discuss this and try to figure out who should take Palpatine's spot to help run and rebuild the Empire in their darkest of days, as you could probably think of. That would be after Palpatine, with no real plan in place in the current canon universe. The expanded universe, there's like clones and his consciousness gets moved and all sorts of crazy shit. That's kind of not in here anymore. So there's this big power struggle, and she wants to, instead of have everyone kind of fight each other, she wants everyone to come together and they can, as a consensus, as a chair and a group of all leaders of their own part of the Empire, come together and officially elect and select a leader they can all follow. She tries her hardest and is not, in this book, it's not great. Like, things are not going well. There's too much terrible shit going on. And so she really tries really hard. But in the midst of this, there's another, I mean, obviously that's not the main story. It is actually a couple different parts to it, but the main bit of it is actually, it's pretty cool. What makes it pretty dope altogether is the fact that the story is ultimately about the Empire trying to reorganize itself, but the other part too is it's introducing future characters, one who's a lot of people don't realize is as big as he is in the Star Wars universe, because he plays sort of a bit part in The Force Awakens, but he's recognizable to fans of the genre and things like that, which is pretty cool. His name is Snap Wexley. In the Force Awakens, he's portrayed by I'll pull it up here in a second. I'll pull it up and I'll do that in a minute. I'm gonna go the rest of the characters. So the main part about it is this Outer Rim planet that's under the Imperial control. It's a hub essentially for Imperial activity. Is it called Akiva? Akiva has a lot of military bases on it, and the town, the whole place is overrun by, it's basically got stormtroopers everywhere and dropships in this big base. But during this, Wedge Antilles is captured by Rey during the aftermath of the Empire. He's on a patrol mission to go to Akiva to see what all these Imperial bigwigs that are kind of flooding to this planet to see what they're doing, to kind of spy, but he kind of breaks in the wrong spot and gets captured by Admiral Sloan. And then during that time, so meanwhile, in a galaxy far, far away, a comrade of Antilles and Luke and things is a pilot by the name of Nora Wexley, who is Snap Wexley's mother. She basically goes back to Akiva, where she's from, to reunite with her son, who's kind of fallen away from it. Why she joined the rebellion, she kept him at arm's length so he wouldn't get, you know, hurt and things like that. Not the best relationship building between a mother and a son when it comes to that kind of stuff, especially in a war-torn civil war type thing like this happening right now. Temin is his name. Temin Snap Wexley, who is in his own right actually a very smart gentleman. He rebuilds droids and repurposes droids, as his buddy named Mr. Bones is called. He's a repurposed B1 battle droid, and they're even calling Mr. Bones because he hangs bones of animals and stuff on it, clatters around, and he basically helps him strong arm people and do dash things. Because Snap isn't exactly the most law-abiding citizen, especially because he lives on Akiva, and Akiva is overrun by the Empire. So he does bad things in the eyes of the Empire, but is actually, you know, good for him, and anything to stick it to the Empire, if you know what I mean. So it's them. It introduces a new character, another new character, a Zabrak bounty hunter named Jas Amari. That's another person that kind of gets thrown into this as well, which is pretty cool. And then there's the Imperial Turncoat. I'm going to mess this up. It's Sinjar Wrath Velis, I think, is how it's pronounced. And in this, it's actually known that he's the first gay Star Wars character in canon. I know many believe that they think that Finn and Poe are, but I have a feeling if you've seen The Last Jedi, not so much. They're not going to get together. And I don't think they were gay from the first part. I mean, they were best, like being best friends, but that's because they bonded over a terrible thing that was going to happen to both of them. But so he's in here. He's very, very important in this story. To get into one of the things, the reason I didn't like this story as much as some people would say, and this is the thing. So the story is really good. It's a fun story to listen to. It's the way it's written. I don't know if it's Chuck's. I've never read any of his other books, but there's these interludes in it that take away from the story. So if you've ever read another book that has interludes in the middle of chapter, or not in the middle of chapters, but the end of chapters, between chapters, interlude brings you into, it's another story within the story. Most of the books I've read that I can remember that have interludes have to do with the main story we're doing, just a different character's point of view or a different character we haven't met yet that eventually leads into the main story. This one does not. This makes me think, again, because I haven't read the other two books, that their interludes are leading up to stories, the stories that are happening in the other two books in the aftermath. Because a couple of the interludes have to do with Han and Chewie, and they find out about, because of the fall of the Empire, their control over Kashyyyk, which is Chewbacca's homeworld, is faltering, and they're going to go there and save the Wookiees. They're going to free the Wookiees from the Imperial control. So that's one thing. I was like, that's pretty cool, but it has nothing to do with the main story other than the fact that it has to do with the aftermath stuff. And then learning that Life Debt is going to be about Han and Chewie, obviously it has to do with that, and that leads into it, I guess. I don't know. It's very weird. But then there's this whole thing about bounty hunters, and like, it was really weird. I eventually expected like them all to kind of come together into like towards the end of the story, and it had nothing to do with it. They weren't on the same planet. They weren't even near each other. I mean, I'm pretty sure Han and Chewie weren't even near the Outer Rim where this place takes place on Akiva. So I don't know. It was really weird. It kind of threw me off because it took you out of the story a little bit, and they weren't long enough to get a whole lot of going in them. So I don't know. It's a weird way of choosing to tease other stories. I don't know what it was. It rubbed me the wrong way. But then there's other things inside. The way the words that Chuck chose, as Mike would say, I was disappointed in the way they were done, and it didn't take away from the overall story, even though I complained about it a lot, and I'm complaining about it a lot now. I didn't find it awesome, because he used weird words. Like, at one point, Nora steals a TIE fighter. She needs to basically get a TIE fighter and use it as a distraction, because they're going to break in and free Wedge, because they find out Wedge is being held captive by Admiral Sloan, so they devise this plan to break in and get him. So she's driving, and she doesn't know how to use it, and if you know anything about TIE fighters, this is straight up regular TIE fighter. It's not a TIE Advanced or TIE Bomber. TIE fighters don't actually have shields, like repulsor shields, like an X-Wing would, or the Millennium Falcon, or any of those. They're very bare, but they turn on a dime. They accelerate super fast. They're super lightweight, but they're very dangerous to fly in because of the fact they have no shields. Any slight damage can cause the things to die, just to blow up and crash. It's fucking crazy. So anyway, she steals this, and she's flying it. She can't really get control of it. So if I remember the wording correctly, and it's been a while since I read it, because I read this when it first came out in 2014, 15, something like that. 2015 is right in front of me. I should learn to read. Better. She takes off, and because it's hard to control, she's never flown a TIE fighter before. Not many people have outside, well, TIE fighter pilots. And he's even mirrored how Poe does it, because he's like, he even is a little bit wonky at it too. But the way Chuck wrote it is, he says the TIE fighter wibbles and wobbles. And I was like, are those real words that a adult male wrote in a book written for majority of adults to read? It was a very weird choice of words, and it threw me off. And like, I remember, I think I was, because if I've never explained this to you guys before, I do a lot of audiobooks as well as ebooks, mainly because I have no room in my house for actual physical books, and it makes me upset because I like physical books, I like the way they feel. I love the smell of them, first off. It's really weird. But with this, I started reading ebooks and doing audiobooks things a long time when Joe explained or told me about this thing called Whispers thing from Amazon. And again, I'm going to go into this real quick, because if you guys don't know about it, it's pretty awesome. And this isn't a plug. I'm not getting paid by Amazon unless they want to pay me for it. It's called WhisperSync. So WhisperSync is this. If you buy an audiobook, an ebook from the Kindle store on Amazon, there's an option to add audio. If you've ever looked at audiobooks before, they can be very expensive. So they can range at the low end. They can be pretty cheap, actually. But for the most part, like really like popular books or mainstream books, can be about $35 or so at the bare, like the low end, and like up to like $50 and $60 for the, like, I guess you could say like the top end pricing or whatever. It's very strange, but it's so they can be very expensive. But when you buy a WhisperSync, it's actually super cheap. So if you go to Amazon and you go to the Kindle store, just look for a book, and you can use, I'll actually pull up Aftermath on here, which is, if Tim is listening, he hates when we do shopping on the show, but I'm still going to do it, because it makes me laugh and it pisses him off, but it also helps me explain cool things, you guys, or awesome things, I like to say. So I'm going to type in Star Wars Aftermath, because it's the book I'm talking about, and I'll tell you the price of everything. So if you bring it up, oddly enough, there's a ad for Ready Player One. So if we do, so here it is, Star Wars Aftermath. The Kindle book is $9.99. So right there, it's cheaper than any paperback book you've ever bought in your life. But you can do the add the audio for it, which normally without doing the unlimited audio or audio book trial from Audible would actually cost you a pretty penny. And so let's see if I can find. No, I don't want that. It won't tell me what it is. Curses. All right, let's go to Life Debt. Life Debt will have it on there. So Kindle book for Life Debt. I failed you on the first one because I already own it, so it wouldn't let me do it. Is $9.99. The Audible book without being WhisperSync is $30. So right there, you can tell it's like that's pretty expensive for just the audiobook. But if you add it to the Kindle book, it's like $12.99. So the audiobook, the Kindle ebook is $9.99. You can read it on your phone, your tablet, your e-reader, Kindle. Except I have a Kindle Paperwhite that I read, and thanks, Joe, for pointing that out to me. It's an excellent purchase. So that's already cheaper than buying a regular book. Because it's only $10, and most books are anywhere from like $15 if they're hardcover, which is really the best way to buy a book because it looks really good on the shelf. If you could see this, you could see. I have a lot of them. They're $20, $25, $30, something like that. So this is already cheaper that way. And you could add the audio to it for $12.99. So that brings it down, if you do the math real quick, $10 and $13 is $23. That's cheaper than the $30 it would cost to buy the audio book by itself, right? So this is the magic of WhisperSync. Not just that it's cheaper, because it is, but WhisperSync actually is the ability for the ebook and the audiobook to link up together or sync. And so when you're listening or reading, the last part you're at, it saves it to the cloud, and you can continue at that exact same spot in the other. So for me, example, I have about a 40 minute to an hour long drive every day to work one way, right? So I will listen to the audiobook, and then not that I'm ever bored on lunch because I'll play Xbox, but if I was ever bored on lunch, I could pull out my Kindle and I could read it. But when I get home and I want to read, I can just pull my Kindle and it's going to say, hey, the last time you were reading this, you're at this point. Do you want to jump to that part? Boom, I jump right to where I was left off in the audio, and then continue reading on where I was at, and instead of trying to remember, oh, what chapter I was on, how many minutes is this into it, whatever it is, right? Because the e-books, obviously they have a different page count depending on what your size display you're reading them on, which is pretty cool because like they resize themselves. Anyways, it doesn't matter. You can continue on where you're going. It's pretty cool. It's pretty awesome the way they do that. So I think if you're interested in ebooks or audiobooks, A, you can save yourself some money by doing it this way, and you have the opportunity to use both. So that's pretty cool too, if you ask me. I like that a lot. So back to what I was talking about before I went on the rant about WhisperSync from Amazon and Audible, who Amazon owns Audible. If you don't know that, that's why that works so well. And WhisperSync is a pretty dope ass thing, but the writing style of the books kind of threw me off because his writing style was kind of weird. The interludes threw me off quite a bit, and it was hard. Like, I enjoyed the story, but it was hard to get through it because of that way. And if you ever listen to any of the Star Wars books, for the most part, all of them are read or performed by Mark Thompson. And the other cool thing about the audiobooks too, which is one of the reasons you should definitely do audiobooks at least once for one. If you want to do a really good one, any of the novelizations of the movies are really fun. And it was obviously with the books that I'm talking about this month are really cool too. But Mark Thompson does a really good job of changing his voice for the different characters, but also in the production of the audiobook is one of the reasons it's so expensive. They do real Star Wars music. They do real Star Wars sound effects. They do the sound effects for R2-D2, for Chewbacca. They do C-3PO's voice. He changes his voice to sound like Han and Luke and all the other characters. A little bit of Leia, too. And it's a guy doing a lady's voice, so you can kind of tell it's not really a lady. But he does a really good job. Especially his version of Han is spectacular. So you almost think it's like a different cast, but it's all Mark Thompson, and he does a really good job. He reads so many of the audiobooks for the Star Wars books. I think it's like his main gig. I can probably pull it up. And if it's not, the dude does way too many fucking books then, because he is ridiculous into how many books that he does. I've read and listened to probably 10 Star Wars books of the current canon, and some out like Razor's Edge and Honor Among Thieves, which are not out of canon. But anyways, he does so many of them, and it's ridiculous. Like, so many. This says here, this does not list all of his audiobooks. That's dumb. This says here that he's done, what is that, 21 books? That's, I mean, well, first off, 21 audiobooks in general is it's a ton of books. So let's see which ones he's done. Says he did 9 of the books and the Legacy of the Force. That's Expanded Universe. I don't know if that's all the same ones. No, they're not. They don't do a very good job of breaking down his actual books. Fate of the Jedi series is 9 books. Okay, he did Outcast. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. He's done so many of them. He does all 3 of the audiobooks for the Aftermath series. I know he did the Thrawn trilogy of books. That's a bunch of different. That was 3 books. I said a bunch. It's 3 books. If I'm mistaken, I think he did Force Awakens also. I have not read The Last Jedi. Last Jedi just came out, so I haven't read that one yet. I will get to it though eventually. The novelization for Force Awakens is pretty fun. If you never read it, or if you didn't hear me talk about it on the main podcast way back when, there's actually some extra stuff thrown in that was left out, and one of them was the cool scene that they, when the, I I think it's the 3D Blu-ray set came out for Force Awakens. There's this scene inside Moss's cantina or her bar where Unkar from Jakku shows back up and he confronts Rey, and Rey actually almost goes to shoot him, but she forgets to take the safety off, which is actually mentioned in the movie and in the book one point when she said, "I know how you shoot." He's like, "I'm sure you do." But she forgets to take the safety off because she gets panicked, and he knocks the gun out of her hand. Well, he's about to kill her with the gun. It's crazy. And then Chewie comes up and rips his arm off. And I was like, that's fucking dope. Why didn't that happen in the movie? And guess what? They actually did film it, but because of how long of a movie it was for Force Awakens, they cut it because it's 135 minutes. So that was just one of the scenes they cut. But you can actually watch the deleted scene on the 3D Blu-ray, I think is what it is. It might be on the regular Blu-ray too, or on the special features on like iTunes and stuff. But I'm pretty sure I watched it on the 3D one because that's where it came out. So it might have been added to the other ones. But yeah, it's pretty fucking cool ass scene to have in there. So it was pretty fun. But the if you want to read the novelization of any of them, I'm pretty sure Mark Thompson does those ones too. So he's really good, and he's really his voices are really add to it. But the atmosphere, like in Heir of the Jedi, I think I talked about a little bit in the audiobook, is you hear blaster fire and you hear like the engines sounds and sound effects, and he's not making them. They're actual digital sound effects that they add in, so it's like a little radio play, but all just Mark Thompson just doing all the voices. It's really a good way to it's like listening to a movie, but there's a lot more description in it, so like it's like, you know, what it would be like if you were blind or couldn't see the movie. Like back in the day, they did radio plays and things like that, like soap operas on the radio, like The Shadow and stuff, where they describe dark, shadowy areas and fog covering the ground, and the shadow steps out, blah, blah, blah. They do that, and it's really cool because he does all the voices and they have all the sound effects, so it's pretty fun. Anyways, back to this book to wrap it up real quick. So the cool thing about this is, and I'm going to bring it to the First Order stuff I was talking about later, is the First Order was brought together, obviously, at the end of Episode 6. Luke and all of his friends, Luke, Han, Leia, Lando, all of them, they help each other, and they destroy the second Death Star, Death Star 2, over Endor. When this happens, obviously, they kill the Emperor, Vader dies. Spoiler alert, by the way. I'm spoiling this for you. Man, you're just watching Star Wars for the first time. I kind of feel bad for you, but also, like, I wish I was an adult when I can experience Star Wars for, like, the first time, because you glean so much more out of it. It'd be so much fun. Anyways, so after the fall of the Empire, where Aftermath takes place, again, that's why it's called that, there's essentially three people who help rebuild the Empire into the First Order, and it links three characters from three different things together. The first one is Admiral Ray Stone, or Sloan, from the Aftermath books. The second one is the father of General Hux from the Force Awakens, and the third is the father of hold on, I'm going to find it. I should have pulled it up first, and I forgot because I closed the other window that they were in. I will pull it up here in a second. Organization. And I don't know how Snook rose to power within it, but obviously he runs the First Order with Hux and all that stuff, and obviously we don't really know too much about him. If you've seen Last Jedi, I don't want to spoil anything for you, but you still don't know who he is. But the three of them, and I have names, and I had them before, and I closed that window like a big old dumb idiot. Is this it? General, no, that's Hux's name. Armitage Hux is the character from Force Awakens. His father's the one that developed the training that the stormtroopers go through within the First Order. He was actually part of the Empire's training too, But that's why Hux is so into the Stormtroopers over Kylo and his Sith ways, as even though he's not technically a Sith, but he is, but he's not in the Sith Order, because they kind of stop that whole feeding on each other fucking bullshit for power, because the rule of two, law of two, rule of two, I think it's rule of two. I should know that because I'm a really big fan. His father, Brendel Hux, there it is, Brendel Hux, is a commandant in the Imperial Academy, and he trains the Stormtroopers. So he trains them from birth, all the way up to when they're fully formed, fully adult, and they go into being in the service of the Empire. So he's the one that indoctrinates them into being Stormtroopers, which is ridiculous, because they do it from birth. It's like cray cray. It's very nuts. The cool thing about the whole building of the First Order is these three come together to form the First Order out of the rubble and the ashes of the Empire when it fell. As you learn, if you read these books, or I can tell you right now, the Aftermath books, the Empire does not come back very well from this at all. And so Sloane, along with Hux and the other guy who is from the third arm of the story, is from Battlefront 2, if you know about the video game, as well as the books for Inferno Squad and stuff. The main character in that, her father, is an admiral, I believe, or a general. Though three of them. Yeah, so they. Here is, I found it again, part of it. So, after they seize control over a mad Grand Admiral, Rax, they basically say this is not going to work. The Empire is not coming back the way it should. They're feeding on each other. They're not listening to each other. None of that. They basically come together. So it's Brendel Hux, it's Admiral Sloane, and the other guy. I can't find this. It's not the same page I was on. I thought it was. I should use my history, but I have opened so many pages, it's ridiculous. Anyways, the three of them, they go to unknown regions, so out past the outer limits, like way past Jakku, like way out to this unknown area where they have a shipyard, and they pool all of their resources, so the training, the leftover stormtroopers, the everything, and they basically build the First Order in the unknown regions outside of the reach of the Rebellion as well as the reach of the Republic, and form the First Order to come back and strike back like the Empire would with bigger forces. So it's pretty cool because they take all the things that they believe the Empire could do with the might of their military force, their naval force, and they build under essentially the original thoughts the Emperor had, and just come out literally swinging. It's kind of ridiculous, as you saw in the Force Awakens, as well as in the Last Jedi. If you've seen it, all they're going to do is basically all they can do is just murder till they get what they want, and they take out everybody. They're relentless, and that's exactly what they went for. They did this to basically prove the might of the Empire isn't dead. And they refer, again, I don't know why they call themselves the First Order. I haven't got that far into it. I probably could look it up, but I don't want to ruin it for myself. They come up out and build the First Order, and then obviously they hook up with Snoke, who has obviously some resources they needed because the ships they have, and the might of Kylo and the Knights of Ren help them enforce their rule. When you first start the Force Awakens, it's not like no one's ever seen them. You're already in the midst of a new civil war where the First Order is pushing up against them, but there's still a lot of their weapons, a lot of their ability, like their technology is still unknown to the Republic and the Rebellion. So that's when you get to see the Starkiller base for the first time, and kind of get to see the might and pure destruction that's available that they have in their disposal. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, so those three come together and basically make the First Order, which is pretty cool. And I should tell you this too, last little bit, this has nothing to do with the Aftermath, but if you read the novelization of The Force Awakens, you get more Poe Dameron, which is totally needed. He's an awesome character. You get a little more about Finn's characterization. Not a whole lot of his backstory. It's still kind of unknown, just like Rey's. A couple more things with Rey. You get more of the First Order stuff. But the biggest thing I'll say right now is I read this after I saw the movie, and I love The Force Awakens, just like I loved The Last Jedi. But the novelization had one big difference that really kind of made me mad, disappointed, as Mike would say, is this. The weapon that the Starkiller base had wasn't just a laser beam that could split off into multiple beams and destroy planets like you saw in the movie. It was actually a hyperspace weapon. And I think in the movie, they even mention it, and I could just be wrong, it could just be me thinking this, but the hyperspace weapon is this. It opens up a hyperspace channel and shoots essentially that beam through hyperspace into the core of the planet, causing the planet to erupt. And when it does that, it sends out the core overloads, it destroys the planet that the core is in, and then the force of that rips through all nearby planets that force can hit through. So in the movie, you see that beam come out, and it's a huge, massive beam going, and then it splits off, and it's like those four or five beams and takes out all those different planets. This is way more different. You don't see it coming to the main planet. So when they go to destroy the Republic capital, they have no idea. All of a sudden, the planet starts to shake, and then it just blows up, and all the surrounding planets get taken out by this blast, and just get nuked along with it. And it's devastating because they can do it from far reaches of space. They don't have to, like the Death Stars, they don't have to move into a certain area. They can just open up a hyperspace channel, which is basically just opening a door into hyperspace, shoot this powerful radiation beam into the core of the planet, making it turn that planet into a bomb and blowing up all the surrounding planets around it. Way more devastating and way more terrifying than they'd made it in the movie. In the movies, they did it from a far distance, and that's why, like, holy shit, like, they have far reach. But if it would have been hard to really explain in the movie, even though they said it in the movie, that's a hyperspace weapon. But yeah, I mean, that's crazy. And that's why they were able to build it in a planet, so they don't have to really move it around. They just move it from star to star, they convert the star into the energy needed to make this weapon fire. Weapon charges, open up a hyperspace channel, shoot that beam into the core through hyperspace. Within seconds, the planet erupts, and surrounding planets and planetoids and moons get fucking devastated by it. I mean, it's holy shit, man. It is nuts. I highly recommend reading or doing the audiobook for Force Awakens novelization. It's really, really good. Really fun. Lots of fun, actually. But I think that's going to be it for me for this week. Next week, prepare yourself for a good time. I'm going to be talking about my favorite of all the Star Wars books I've read. And it is going to be a good time. So between now and then, I'll give you the title of it if you want to read it, so you can hear my thoughts on it and, like, talk to me about it through all those different places, like, you know, Facebook and all that fun stuff. The book is called Dark Disciple. So Star Wars Dark Disciple. I won't give you any more about that. If you want to read it before next week, do it. If not, you'll hear me spoil it for you. and gush about how amazing it is. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody, where we're talking about Star Wars Aftermath, as well as many other things. Longer episode this week, but that's what happens when I start talking about stuff I like and how awesome it is. Anyways, that's it. So let's continue being awesome, everybody. Talk to you next week.